5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, in this episode, I wanted to give you an update on a whole bunch of things I've been thinking about. And I was wondering if I could get a, you know, name one particular topic on it. I think it's going to be the political situation and what it's doing to the economic situation. Actually, when I started making a list of things that I wanted to give you in an update, I got quite a lot. I definitely want to cover the UK budget. I want to cover Trump's win and what that is doing to markets and the outlook for investments. I wanted to come on to things like things that have really done well from the Trump trades, such as Tesla and Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin, as we've talked about in previous episodes, is catching the liquidity cycle, which I've talked about a lot before, but I'll try and recap some of that. And the cycle more broadly. I think that a lot of the Tesla and the Bitcoin stuff, if I went into that and I did it properly, it's going to take maybe a bit too long. So I might want to do this over two episodes. So maybe this episode can be about really focusing on the political stuff in the UK and the US. Well, actually, it's going to be the whole Western world. I mean, it's the same problem set that they've got in all of them. Europe is not doing well, but I mean it's the whole Western world. So let's get into those things, and if I need to do it as two episodes to really flesh out some of those latter ideas, I will do so. But let's start off with talking about the UK budget. The Labour Party recently won the election, not really by virtue of the fact that they were popular and people wanted them. They won because the Tories were so completely awful and had betrayed everybody and had run immigration up to in excess of a million new arrivals a year. And these were not high quality individuals they were bringing in. It was not, you know, the global elite. It was not the top 1% in IQ. It was basically just anybody who wanted to come here for any reason. And the people most motivated to come here are the people who want to access the welfare system because it's easier than being in whatever a stan and not having any money. So the floodgates were opened and we have had a crippling effect on the welfare budget. 60% of social housing is in London is occupied by people who were not born here. You know, the Tories, they just completely lost the plot. And Dominic Cummings, who was the chief of staff to Boris Johnson, he had a recent exchange with Maven Politics, a friend of mine. And Maven asked Cummings, well, why did you open the floodgates? And his response was, and he said, this is a literal quote from Boris Johnson, open the floodgates, change the point system so that everybody gets in because I want the FT to like me, which is... Well, anyway, the Tories have to be destroyed for their. They're not a right wing party. They're not fiscally responsible. I mean, they're just they're just awful. They had to go. So anyway, Labour won. They won with 15% of the eligible voters. I say eligible voters because, of course, more people are eligible to vote than actually get on the electoral register. A lot of people just don't even bother doing that. They won with 20% of the people who could vote. So there is no way of spinning this to say that they are popular in any way. And actually, since winning office, they have set record unpopularity. Keir Starmer has set record unpopularity. And I think they know quite how unpopular they are. They've picked a fight with Elon Musk, who is constantly coming after them. Good. So I don't think they do not seem to be looking to rescue their popularity. In fact, they've just seemed to have decided, well, we're just going to do all the crazy socialist shit that we've ever wanted to do. So I was not optimistic coming into the budget of a couple of weeks ago. I do have to say it could have been worse. It could have been considerably better, but it could have been worse. I was worried about them going after ISIS. ISIS, for those of you who are not in the UK, is our tax-efficient investment tax wrapper, essentially. You can put money into an ISA. You can put taxed money into an ISA. And when it grows, you don't pay any tax on it. So anything that you sell out of it will have no capital gains. And any income you take from it will not have any income tax on it. So that is the primary method of which people in the UK save. And if you're in another Western country, you will have something similar, I'm sure. There was a concern that they were going to go after that. If they did that, and that was the big rumor that they were going to go after it, it would have completely disincentivized savings to the point where I don't believe there would have been any point in somebody like me staying in the UK. I mean, that would have been an instant, okay, I've got to go somewhere. Probably America, I'd imagine, because now that Trump's in, he may be fixing some of the things. So on that respect, it could have been worse. But there was a lot of negative things in there. They did raise... Oh, actually, I should also mention this. There's two main ways that you can save in the UK. One is the ISA, which your money is taxed. It goes in the ISA. It becomes tax-free. The other one is you can earn money and then take the tax off of it. So you can put untaxed money into a pension pot, but then you're taxed on the other side. And actually, we ought to come back to that at some point and do a deeper dive on pensions and the difference between those two strategies. I much prefer ISAs because I believe that money that I put into a tax-efficient wrapper, I will make a lot more upside through investing it, and therefore I'm not concerned about saving the 30, 40, 50, whatever percent on the upfront. I'm more interested in saving the gains that I make as I come along there. Anyway, okay, so, but they did increase capital gains tax, which is a particular focus across the Western world at the moment, because basically Western governments, they've run out of money, they want to tax more, they do not want to cut spending. So across the world, we're seeing capital gains tax go up. Kamala Harris, quite famously, was looking at taxing unrealized gains, which was part of her loss. Now, that would have been completely mental if she'd done that, because that means that even if you hadn't sold the asset, you just held on to it, you'd be taxed on the upside, which it is just blatant theft. I mean, so you're taking all that investment risk for making an investment, and then even if you don't sell it, you still get taxed on it. But anything you lose, you don't get tax relief on unrealized losses. So it would have just completely killed the incentive to invest in America. But fortunately, it didn't come to that. But in the UK, they did increase the rates here on both short-term capital gains, things that you've only held for less than 5 years, and long-term capital gains, and I think you've held for longer than that. Capital gains is a really bad tax. Why is it? Because from their point of view, it's a great tax because it only affects what they consider rich people. And you can exempt your primary residence. So the idea is that not too many people should pay it. The reason it's a really bad tax is because what it causes is capital immobility. It encourages investors to keep their money in one place rather than move it around to wherever the highest return can be gained. And that's important because capital should flow to the things that are succeeding and flow away from things that are failing. It keeps economies dynamic if there is that cycle of capital. And that's really what financial markets are supposed to do. They're supposed to continually cycle money away from things that are not productive to things that are productive, and therefore you get productivity increases. Europe, the UK, and increasingly the United States as well, has an increasingly poor track record of achieving this, and therefore productivity rates over time has been coming down, and therefore the economy is not growing, and therefore there is less to tax in the regular way. So they have to start inventing new creative ways of taxing people. But by doing this, they're just ensuring that future productivity rates are going to be lower. And therefore, the problem for future governments is going to be higher, leading to more and more aggressive taxation, which again suppresses the growth in the economy. So it could have been worse, but they're moving strongly in the wrong direction. There's the particularly pernicious element of this is what they did to the farmers, which I want to come back to in a minute, because that's probably the thing that deserves the most focus. But before I get to that, I just want to point out that the Labour government is full of people who have never run a business. There's not a single person in that government who's ever opened and run a business. The problem that we've got is that there is no incentive to open a business anymore. It is made incredibly difficult for you through a bevy of taxes and regulations. If you try and do anything, the system of regulations, your local council will put so many roadblocks in your way that you can get stuff done eventually, but it's incredibly painful. You spend a lot of your time dealing with the bureaucracy and the regulations rather than doing something productive. And so invariably, people who do open businesses have an extremely high failure rate, over and above the fact that any new business has a high failure rate anyway. And those people like me, I mean, I'm the sort of person who absolutely should be opening a business if this was a normal functioning economy. I've got a good set of skills, I've got plenty of capital behind me. I'm still young enough that I could throw a lot of energy into something. But I know how this system works, and I know that it's completely unattractive and completely unviable. And I basically made the calculation almost 10 years ago. Not quite 10 years ago, but basically when I was getting ready for retirement in my late 30s. And I ran this calculation and thought, yeah, I should open a business now, but it's going to be made too difficult. So instead, what I will do is I will just invest money instead, and I will invest it in a big business which can afford lawyers and compliance teams and has achieved sufficient scale that the percentage of regulatory and business hassles is small enough compared to the percentage of productive time and energy that they can throw at something that they can actually grow. Because this is what governments have done. They've made it basically unviable for small businesses. And so therefore, I put my capital towards investing in large businesses. It turned out to be exactly the right thing for me, because those assets have grown very nicely indeed. And I'll come on and talk about some of those when we get further into this segment and about how it's happened. But it's not the right thing for the country. Because that business, and I don't know if that theoretical business that I would have opened would have been successful, but I didn't even try, because of the business environment in the Western world is simply too unattractive to even attempt it. So, yeah, Labour and the Tories before them, they're barking up the wrong tree. There has to be a reset on this. Unless productivity levels are going to continue to be depressed or even continue to decline like they have been, and Europe simply becomes irrelevant and it will be overtaken. Europe thinks of itself as a rich first world set of countries, but they are poisoning themselves with excessive taxation, government and regulation. So let's talk about the farmers. Farming, you know, especially in an old country like this, is something that is passed down the generations. You know, we have farmers who have been working the same bit of land as their fathers and their fathers and their fathers. And, you know, you can go back a dozen or more generations. The land is not some tradable asset for them. It's not something they're speculating on. It's not something that they are... they haven't financialized it. But because governments are so desperate for money, Labour decided that they're going to start taxing farmland. Okay, what's happened to land itself? Well, that is downstream of the broader set of problems that governments are having now. And I've talked about this in Brokenomics many times, but let's recap. Basically, it's all downstream of a demographic issue. The baby boomers was a large generation. And when baby boomers were coming up, they wrote a set of rules that were very generous to their parents, the greatest generation, the people who fought in the war. Lots more pensions, welfare and other things as well, a whole bunch of social services, but pensions is the big one. And they assumed it was fine because there was lots of working people and relatively few retired people, and so the maths worked. The baby boomers then did not have a proportionally large generation following them in order for the maths to continue to work, because the maths they set up with their government programs only works if the population increases by this roughly the same amount as the increase from the greatest generation to the baby boomers. They had the millennial generation. Millennial generation is a large generation. It's slightly larger than the baby boomers. But as a percentage increase, it is not large. There's no that growth rate was not maintained. So what started happening is in 2016, 2017, the baby boomers started retiring at a pace. This is still going on. The really big baby boomer retirement, because there was with the baby boom generation, there was two big booms, and the really big one is coming up, and that's going to be upon us shortly. So the proportion of retired people is significantly higher than the system was set up to anticipate, which means that governments are running deficits. Now, governments have run deficits in the past where they are spending more than they earn. But normally, large deficits is only a thing that happens if you're in the middle of fighting a world war or there's some sort of catastrophe going on. Historically, they've not run deficits at a time where unemployment is low, when you're not at war, where inflation is, as it currently technically is, and we come on to talk about this, relatively low. And so permanent deficits has become a regular feature of the Western world. Japan got there first. They got there about 15 years earlier than us, for the simple reason that the demographic spike that I'm talking about across the Western world is also happening in Japan, but it's happening 15 years earlier because they are on a slightly different cycle. For different reasons, their boom came earlier than ours did. There's happened more in the latter stages of the silent generation. And they have been floundering ever since. But now Western governments, they have been catching the same issue. They're running large deficits, and these are structural deficits. They can't shift them. Okay, so what do you do? Well, one element, like I say, is raising taxes, and we've been talking about that. The second element is if there's a gap, they simply monetize it. Short version, they print a lot of money whenever they need to fund that gap between what they're bringing in and what they're sending out. And we talked about this on Brokenomics many times, so I won't go into too much detail, but essentially the money that they're creating debases the value of all the existing money out there. So money becomes worth less over time. And things that are not being washed out through this debasement process are becoming worth more. And we are certainly in the stage of the cycle at the moment where people understand that you need to get out of simply holding money. You don't just want a large bank account. You need to do something with it. You need to get it into something which the government cannot print. A major beneficiary of that in terms of value would be land, because, of course, we are not going to get any more land in the UK. So the amount is fixed. So therefore, the value of the land starts to rise quite significantly. Capital gains tax does not take into account inflation. So capital gains tax is evil anyway, because, you know, things like, you know, the value of your house, if it gets beyond a certain threshold, or your second house or your other asset, whatever your set of assets is, if they can't be printed, they are going to go up over time. And they might even go up relatively nicely, say 14% a year, but, you know, somewhere between 14, 15, 16%, that's the rate that the money is being debased every year. So the value of these things can go up, and you're not actually getting any richer in terms of what you can buy with it. It's simply that these assets are repricing to the amount of money debasement that is occurring. Okay, so you apply that to land. Land is getting significantly more valuable because of this debasement effect. The land itself is not becoming more valuable. Well, I suppose it is to a small extent, in that the population is growing and therefore the share of land adjusts because of that. But that's not really what's driving it here. It's simply the debasement effect. So apply that back to farmers. They never asked for the land values to go up. It is simply a part of what they need to use in order to carry on the farming. And for this reason, farmland had always been exempt from capital gains as a recognition of, you know, this is not something they're speculating on. It's the farm. It's very basic. But Labour doesn't see it like that. They just see a bunch of rich people who have millions of pounds worth of land. And from their perspective, these people are greedy because they're not paying their fair share. And we've seen this on Twitter or X ever since Labour did this. A load of spiteful lefties are cock-a-hoop about this because they're saying all these rich farmers are going to be, you know, made to pay their fair share and they've been hoarding all this wealth. Well, it's not wealth, it's land. It's just debasement has made it, the cash value of that land, go up. A lot of these, some of these farmers are earning good money and they're traditionally rich in the sense that they have liquid assets, they have liquid wealth, but a lot of them are not. They're really struggling. They just happen to be rich in terms of the land if they were to sell it. They never asked for this. So now, when the older generation passes, the younger generation are going to find themselves where they have no increase in liquid wealth. They haven't got a, you know, huge bank account or something, because that's how the left thinks about wealth. They think it is this huge stock of, they think of Scrooge McDuck diving into a vault full of gold coins. They can't perceive wealth in any other way because they're stupid. Smaller farms are going to get hit with these enormous inheritance tax bills. And the only way they're going to be able to pay it is by selling off a chunk of land to pay the tax. And a lot of them are farmers that are only just viable as they are, because farming has been attacked by successive governments. So they're going to sell off a block of land, and the farm may now be unviable. It is completely wrong. the left doesn't care. A senior Labour advisor went on, I think it was GB News, and he was incredibly spiteful towards farmers. He was saying, well, we just don't need them. We don't need farmers, you know, because, again, if you're a socialist, why do you need farmers? You can get food from shops. He doesn't like the fact that these people are angry about these huge taxes because in his mind, rich people should not complain about taxes because they're not paying their fair share. It's awful and it's wrong. So hopefully I can get a farmer on the channel soon to talk about this, but it's something that I had to flag up because this needs to come. We need to come back to this, and we're going to have to solve this problem as a country. What else has been happening? According to Henley and Partners, 16,500 UK millionaires have fled the country since Labour have got in, and a bit before when it became obvious Labour were going to get in. And again, the left is spitefully happy about all of this happening. They're saying, good riddance, off you go. They have two thoughts on this. One is, you know, good that these evil rich people are going because they just don't like people who have money. And the other thing is when you put it to a lefty, well, more rich people are going to leave. And it's actually, if you look at tax income, I know most of us pay tax, but it's the top 10% who pay the overwhelming majority of taxes if you force these people to go. So if you tell lefties that this is going to happen more, they don't believe you. They say, well, how can they go? Why would they go? They wouldn't just abandon everything, because again, in their mind, they're running on an outdated model. They think that rich people are these mustache twirling rich factory owners or something that are tied to the land, but that's not how wealth works anymore. A lot, yes, that will be the case for some people, but a lot of people, they actually can up and leave. And of those almost 17,000, I'm sure it's 17,000 by now, millionaires, a lot of centre millionaires are going to be in there. People are just going to leave. And it takes me back to that episode I did, Brokenomics, of the sovereign individual. The prediction of where the current economic logic that governments are operating on, people who can leave the Western world will do so. And invariably, they'll make it harder and harder to leave, and they'll be more and more punitive to the people who stay, the people who for whatever reason, can't get out. You know, we need to change this model. Let's move on. Let's talk about inflation. Western governments are currently of the view that they've got inflation sorted because the inflation number has come down. Well, again, as we talked about on Brokenomics, the inflation number, it's a rate of change. It measures how much prices are increasing. So inflation can come all the way down to zero. And all that means is that prices have stopped going up. It doesn't mean that the price level has come back down again. And your average normie gets this wrong. They think when inflation comes down, what that means is that the price level is coming down. Well, in the price level, even at inflation of zero, the price level has still gone up. And isn't going down. You need negative inflation in order to get the price level down. Anyway, so governments are very happy at the moment because inflation is down to 2-3% across most of the Western world, including in the UK. But you still had the 30-40% a year that we had during the COVID era. That hasn't gone anywhere. So where does that get us to? The Western world, the UK, has a major bond problem. Bond yields are rising. So again, we've done an episode of that, but a quick recap. Bond prices and yields move in the opposite direction. So let's say you've got a £100 bond and it pays a coupon of 5% a year. So the yield on it is 5%. If fewer people want to buy that bond, and in order to sell it, they have to drop the price to, say, £50, well, it's still paying £5 a year coupon, but £5 on £50 is a 10% yield. So you see, as bonds become less attractive, the yield on them goes up. And that's really important because when the governments want to issue future debt, because remember, they're running these big deficits, they have to, in order to sell any of them, they have to match the yield that is prevailing in the market. So the yield that they have to sell the new debt on, it also rises. And that's what's happened to Labour. In fact, it's happening across the Western world, is after the UK budget, yields went up. Because bond buyers are increasingly realising that these governments have no plan to pay back real value. They only have a plan to debase the money supply. So the value of those future series of coupons out into the future are going to be worth less because of this debasement effect, because of the money printing. And therefore, they are only willing to buy these bonds if the yield is suitably high enough in order to compensate them. Not the case for all bond buyers. There's a lot of people who are basically forced to buy bonds, pension funds, insurance funds. A whole bunch of people are required through regulation to buy them. So you've always got that flaw. But you've always got those marginal buyers as well who are looking at this and realizing it's an increasingly bad deal. And so the cost of governments using debt to service this deficit that they're constantly running is going up and up. And this is a trend that is just picking up pace. There appears to be no viable plan to get on top of this. Government is going to become unaffordable. It's happening now. How does it play out? Does it play out by, you know, a big event? You know, do we all wake up one morning to find that the bond markets have crashed? There's been this widespread awakening moment, but there's no point buying these things. And governments collapse. They can't pay the bills. They can't pay the wages. I suspect not, because they got this flaw of buyers, the people who are regulated into being forced to buy it. So I think we're just going to have this trickle where government becomes more and more dysfunctional over time, and the cost of government gets higher, and therefore they impose all these new taxes. More people leave. They try and make it harder for people to leave and take their money with them. You know, I suspect the collapse is going to be slow enough that government has time to respond and try and make, in their mind, to try and solve the problem, but everything they will do will make the problem worse. So I think we're in a grinding collapse, and the UK, Europe, the whole Western world, they need a political earthquake to save themselves. Which brings me on to the second thing that I wanted to get into. Trump's win. That is a momentous political earthquake. Following on this theme, you'll be well aware that he's made a number of excellent appointments. I'm delighted every time I hear a new appointment. I just think that's perfect. There's a whole bunch that we could talk about that probably don't fit into an episode of Brokenomics. I love the stuff he's been doing with RFK getting the health department, which is the largest spending department in all of the US. I love the fact that he took Tulsi Gabbard, who was put on the terror watch list and was harassed and severely inconvenienced every time she wanted to fly because of this, and they put her in charge of national security and the intelligence agencies. So there's a whole bunch I love. Probably the most interesting for us for Brokenomics is going to be what they did with this Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, headed up by Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing.
You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.